Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yeah, we can just let this go. Welcome and welcome back. Rosenblum and Spiegel, Saturday Suckage. Our final hour. We thank you for joining us, sticking with us. And we are now going to go to the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And we are going to welcome in Dan Wallach. And this is a baseball story as only Matt Spiegel can experience, can live, and can tell. Dan, thanks for joining us, and I'm just going to back out of the way right now.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
Hey, Dan. What a pleasure. I had told the story back when I traveled to Greenville, South Carolina for a wedding and went to see the single A team there, the Red Sox affiliate. There, what's the name of the team again?
The Greenville Drive.
Went to see the Greenville Drive, and it's a little mini Fenway Park, an adorable little stadium, and I'm leaving the stadium. And I'm looking across the street, and I'm like, what's that little house doing over there? That's how clueless I was. Not shoeless, but clueless. And then I find out that it is the Shoeless Joe Jackson Home and Museum. And I'm like, oh, my God. What? I didn't know this was here. And I tweet a picture of me in front of it. How cool is this? Oh, I wish it was open. And I get tweeted at by the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum. And it's you saying, you're in town, my dad could meet you tomorrow morning, and your dad gives me an unbelievable personal tour before the museum opened. And I mean, that in itself was a great story and everything like that. But then we find out your connection. You are a Chicagoan, and you're a bartender at Yaxi's, is that right?
Yes, sir. It sure is.
All right. So how the hell does this happen that Dan Wallach, you end up being the guy in charge of the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum in Greenville, South Carolina, coming from suburban Chicago and Wrigleyville bartending? How does that work?
It's a pretty wild ride. So about 12 years ago, my parents retired and moved out to the Greenville area. We're, you know, born and raised in Chicago, Chicagoland. So I went out to go visit them after they moved. And, you know, I was about 21 years old at the time and figured, hey, you know, a 10-day vacation in the mountains would be great. And after the second day, I'm like, what are we going to do for 9 more days? I'm 21, so, you know, it's great, but I'm not quite ready for a 10-day do-nothing vacation. So we're kind of scrambling for stuff to do, and we realized that, oh, okay, the museum had just recently opened. We love baseball. We're a baseball history family. You know, we happen to be White Sox fans, but we'll let that get in the way of the Wrigleyville bartender job. We're like, hey, you know, the Greenville Drive is in town. This is perfect. We'll go to a couple games while I'm here. We'll check out the museum. It's great. So we go in. We're walking around the museum. And the original curator at the time comes up to me, and she's like, hey, you look like you play baseball. And I was like, yeah, you know, I used to, but haven't in a couple years. She goes, well, great. We've got a game on Saturday. It starts at 11, so why don't you show up around 10 o'clock, and it'll be great. I was like, okay, you know, I'm in town for this weekend still, so perfect. And she goes, so we'll put you in left field. And I was like, oh, you want me to play in this game? I thought she was just saying like, hey, come out and watch. And I was like, you know, I'm just here on vacation. I don't have my glove. I don't have my shoes. I don't have anything. And she goes, yeah, it's 1860 style rules. So you don't need a glove. We're playing with you know, without gloves, the ball's a little bit bigger, a little bit softer. You catch it on a bounce, it still counts as an out. So don't worry about any of that stuff. Just show up. It's going to be great.
All right, hold on. So the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum invites you to play in a baseball game with 1860. That's the decades. 1860s style rules. So you're like, okay, what was this game, Dan?
So it turned out to be the first annual, and I know Herb Lawrence hates that term, so we'll call it the inaugural.
we'll bring that up to him when Herb comes after us.
Well, at that time, we didn't know if there was going to be a second one, so it was the first annual. It was a game against the Ty Cobb Museum from Royston, Georgia.
I love that. You're just playing Ty Cobb Museum against the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum, and the winner gets Gehrig Museum in upstate New York.
Right, and these are obviously employees of the museum, but also apparently friends of the museum and or patrons of the museum who looked like maybe they could play.
It was literally just anybody who looks like they could play. we're two small museums. You know, we're both 501c3s and don't have huge staffs. So it was just, okay, the weeks leading up to the game, we got to start asking people who can show up and play. And I happened to be in town when it happened. So it turned out to be just an amazing event. You know, we had descendants from both Shoeless Joe Jackson and Ty Cobb either at the game or playing in it with us. A bunch of the people who played were also historians and experts on both guys. So it was just an incredible community of people. And I decided to start going back year after year. And, you know, since my parents were in the area, I would use that as my excuse to make that the trip to go visit them. And here we are 11 years later. This past October was the 11th game. I was the one who actually set up that event. You know, I coordinated everything and put it all together. And it's because this past May, the original curator from the Joe Jackson Museum stepped down. And after knowing me for a decade, the board of directors called me up and said, hey, do you want to come take over? And I was like, you guys do know that I live in Chicago, right? And they're like, yeah, you'd have to move. So it was, you know, some negotiation from there, but it was definitely something I was interested in doing. And we're really excited about a lot of the stuff that we have coming up.
Wow. So now you have moved down there.
And I'm moving in like 6 days.
In 6 days, you are moving. And this is your life for the foreseeable future. The curator of the Shoeless Joe Jackson Home and Museum. It's an amazing story of like, go ahead and do something that's fun, be passionate about it, be involved, and you never know where the hell life can take you.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's kind of been my philosophy always, is never turn anything down because you never know what it can turn into. And, you know, that's even how I got started bartending at Yahtzee's. Is they used to have two locations, the original one on Diversey. A buddy of mine used to work there and put out a Facebook post saying, hey, we need somebody to watch door tonight because our guy just bailed. Who can help out? I had experience working door, so I was like, hey, I can be over there. And soon enough, I was bartending, and then they moved me over to the Wrigleyville location. And 5 years later, I was basically the head bartender at the Wrigleyville location of Yahtzee. So you never know what can happen if you put yourself in a position to be there for somebody. So that's kind of the life motto, I guess.
Dan, like every coach says, the best ability is availability.
There it is.
And you're an example of that. So let's discuss a couple things. Dan Wallach is our guest, the Yahtzee's bartender who's now going to curate the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum home. And to show you the depth and breadth of how much you were the right man, you have an autograph. You have a tattoo of the man's signature. You have the tattoo on your foot. Mm-hmm. The signature of a man who is illiterate, right? So how does that happen?
So he never learned how to read or write because by the time he was 6 years old, he was already working, working in the textile mills as basically sweeping up the floors and doing stuff like that to help, you know, raise money for his family. So he never went to school for a single day in his life, never learned how to read or write. So when he would need to sign autographs, either his wife would do it for him, his wife, Katie, who ended up being a business partner with him. You know, they used to run businesses and basically every city that he ever lived, and they were successful business people. So she would either sign the autograph for him, or he would carry a little piece of paper in his wallet of her signature of his name. And if she wasn't around, he would trace it. He would pull that out and trace it.
Wow.
So there are probably less than 10 examples where we know for certain it is his version of his signature. Most of them are on legal documents. So the deed to his liquor store, the deed to his house, his last will and testament, his driver's license, stuff like that. So it's all legal documents. So I took the signature from his last will and blew it up to 3.56 inches, which is his batting average. His career batting average was 356, and put it on my right foot. So you can only see it when I'm Steve shoeless.
There it is. Come on. That's beautiful.
I applaud the brilliant thinking. It's wonderful. And the address we should share with the people, the address of the house is.
It's 356 Field Street. They're building a new luxury apartment complex on that same property. And the address of that complex is going to be 408 Jackson, which is a callback to his rookie season batting average of 408, which is still the highest batting average ever in the history of baseball for a rookie.
Amazing. Dan Wallach is our guest here on The Score, the bartender at Yoxie's turned curator of the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum in South Carolina.
I'm looking at a picture right now on this great article from my friend Kevin Kaduk of formerly of Yahoo. It's the Midway Minute, and there's a picture of you here near a Black Sox exhibit in Cooperstown at the Hall of Fame at the age of 12. So this is the way that the baseball world can work when you're passionate and you're just kind of following around. There's you in front of the Black Sox exhibit at age 12, and now you're in charge of Joe's Museum. I thought, frankly, that the White Sox missed a great opportunity this past year to do something.
Yes, you did.
With the 100-year anniversary.
You made that known.
Because I know it's, obviously, it's a black mark, but people don't know some of this stuff in it. And what they don't know, some of them don't know, is that Shoeless Joe didn't throw anything intentionally, did he, Dan?
We don't think so, no. He had the highest batting average in the series. He batted 375. He set the record for most hits in a single World Series at that time, and that was a record that stood for 49 years after that. He hit the only home run of those series, and what a lot of people don't even understand about that specific home run was that was the last home run hit in the dead ball era. 1920 was the start of the live ball era, so Joe Jackson hit the last home run of the dead ball era. He didn't commit a single error in the outfield. There's a lot of evidence that he was trying his hardest out there. But at the end of the series, he took money from his teammate who he trusted, and that money came from the gamblers. So, you know, you can try as hard as you want on the field, but when you take the money, that does implicate you. But do we think he tried to lose that series on purpose? No, we personally don't.
One of the fascinating things at the museum is you have letters from how many different commissioners all turning down Joe Jackson for reinstatement into baseball, potential inclusion in the Hall of Fame. How many different commissioners do you have letters from?
I believe we have three, but hopefully there won't be any more in the future because we think at some point he's going to get let in. That's the hope. Whether that happens soon, you know, this the old time committee is meeting this year to decide the fate of the next 10 years of inductees, and then the next one after that would be 10 years from now. So hopefully one of those two meetings ends in Joe being basically allowed to be put on the Hall of Fame ballot.
Talking with Dan Wallach, he is the future curator of the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum, fresh out of Yoxie's behind the bar. And it's last call for him anyways. The idea, the question asks, it's a parallel question, is would the Cubs' aura of lovable losers go away if they actually won the World Series? Isn't that the same question about the whole plight of Shoeless Joe Jackson, the fame of Shoeless Joe Jackson, the romanticism, if you will, of Shoeless Joe Jackson? What if he actually gets into the Hall of Fame? Then what? Is that a legitimate question, or does that just help the museum? You get stock up on stuff.
That is something we've struggled with. Like you said, part of the reason why people still remember Joe Jackson, as opposed to guys like Rogers Hornsby, who batted 358 for his career, and you know, led the league in batting like 11 times. And, you know, just these incredible, incredible players from the early 1900s that are completely forgotten about. One of the reasons we remember Joe is because he's not in the Hall of Fame and people feel like he was done wrong by baseball and they want to have that wrong righted. Well, if that wrong is righted, are people still going to care? And that is something that we struggle with as a museum. Do we think he belongs in the Hall of Fame? Of course. He's got the third highest batting average in the history of baseball. You know, it's the Hall of Fame. And can you name me more famous players than Joe Jackson? I mean, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb and Ted Williams all said that Joe Jackson is the best hitter that probably ever lived. You know, Babe Ruth copied his swing after Joe Jackson. So when you're talking about fame, I mean, there aren't too many people who are more deserving of a plaque in Cooperstown than Joe Jackson. But is it going to be a case where if he gets inducted, you know, it'll be huge for the museum for a year or two, but then after that, are people still going to care? You know, we've seen like the Bob Feller Museum and, you know, even the Ted Williams Hitters Hall of Fame in Florida. After these guys pass away, the interest in their museum kind of goes with it. And, you know, obviously here we are 70 years almost after Joe passed away and we still have a thriving museum and we're actually expanding this year. You know, we're building a new addition right now. So we are hitting our stride and have great things ahead of us, but is it going to be something that lasts forever, regardless of whether he's in or not? We hope so, but you never know. So that is something that we're kind of deciding how to move forward with.
You know, it reminds me of how my dad, who grew up a Red Sox fan and a Ted Williams fan, how he felt when the Red Sox finally won it all. He was like, all right, now what? Okay.
Right.
Now,
how do I act?
Yeah. How Cub fans, right. You know, like, all right, you know, we're the team that hasn't won. We're the team that hasn't won. Okay. Now we won. Okay. What do we do now? I think you'd rather win. I think you'd rather get in and have that bump and have things change, Dan.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I got two quickies for you before we let you go. First of all, sure. Tell people about the auction that you won. The item that you were so excited to win at auction, an item that you knew, in fact, Joe Jackson had touched while he was alive.
Yeah, so part of the hard thing about collecting Joe Jackson stuff is that he really lived in a time before there were game-used jerseys or game-used bats that people cared enough about to keep after the fact. You know, so there isn't too much memorabilia out there of things that we know he was involved with. So one of the things that just got put up for auction this past year was a business card from the liquor store that he ran in Greenville, South Carolina, after his playing career was over. And again, a very successful business. You know, he ran that with his wife, Katie. He used to give out business cards, you know, to people who were interested or in the area. And of all the business cards that got handed out over the years, there are only two known examples that have, you know, survived. One of them was the one that was in his wallet when he passed away. That was the one that got put up for auction a few months ago, and I won that auction. So we're pretty excited about that. We're thrilled to have that, you know, on display in the museum. We also have a type one photo of him standing behind the counter at the liquor store. It is a pretty famous picture of Joe, so you may have seen it before. Type one photo just means it was printed very early on after the negative was taken, and it was taken from the original negative. So it's the highest clarity that you can possibly have of a photo. We're going to blow that up life-size and have that be the first thing you see when you walk in the gift shop. And I found the exact same make and model cash register that he's resting his hand on in that photo. We're going to have that in the museum as well, so people can stand behind it and recreate that photo for themselves.
Man, that's awesome. One of the things I held in my hands when I was down there was a replica of the bat, Black Beauty, it's called?
Betsy.
Black Betsy. Black Betsy. But yeah, held the bat so heavy, yeah. And such a thick handle. How on earth was that possible? But it's a great trip and a great pilgrimage. All right, and then I just wanted to ask you, what's your favorite baseball stat or nugget about Joe to kind of indicate to people how absurdly good he was as a contact hitter, as a hitter? It is time. Give me a stat that you love about Joe.
So we already talked about how the fact that he hit .408 in his rookie season, he holds the record for highest batting average ever for a rookie. He also holds the highest batting average for a person in his last season as a player. He hit .382 in 1920 before the Major League Baseball came and banned the White Sox. So He's got a 408 average his first year, a 382 average his last year. Just imagine the stuff he did in between. I mean, he was an incredible player. And, you know, pitchers pay the price when they face Jim Rice.
Yes.
But
yes.
They also pay the price when they face Shoeless Joe.
Oh, God. If you got that in for me, God bless you. Yeah, that was my favorite T-shirt as a kid.
So are there – one last question about the museum, Dan Wallach. Yeah. Are there any pictures of D.B. Sweeney or Ray Liotta?
There are. We actually have a section in the museum that's Shoeless Joe in pop culture. So stuff from, you know, Eight Men Out, stuff from Field of Dreams. Also, the bat that Roy Hobbs used in The Natural was modeled after the story behind Black Betsy. There's a lot of instances of Joe being referenced or directly talked about in pop culture. So if you guys want to follow along, at Shoeless Museum on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, we will definitely be getting more active the closer we get to reopening this summer.
Well, it's worth a pilgrimage if you're anywhere in the area, because that ballpark is awesome for the Greenville Drive. It's a gorgeous little town. The mountains nearby are awfully nice. Enjoy your life down there. And if anybody has a chance, go check out the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum. Totally worth it.
Thank you so much, Matt, and Steve also, but Matt especially, thanks for always shouting us out on social media and keeping our name out there.
Yeah, yeah, Meanderings with Matt. We're trying to get this as a PBS series, and we're going to go to Greenville.
I wanted to hang out with your dad the whole day. Like, we could have just sat there and talked baseball, go get a biscuit at one of the many biscuit places.
Come back after we reopen, and I can definitely make that happen for you. I know his number.
There you go. He knows him. All right, Dan, thanks. Good luck on it.
Thanks so much, you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, that's Dan Wallach, Yoxie's bartender.
Great.
It's last call. He's going down to Greenville, South Carolina.
Why
to
not?
Curate this Shoeless Joe's Museum.
You know how hard it is to like find a job you like and are passionate about? You know how hard it is to find a career?
He's got this thing wired. Right. We just listened to that. He's got it wired.
Yeah, how hard it is to find something that feels exciting and might actually sustain you for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
Good for him. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Santana Energy Services. Visit SantanaEnergyServices.com.
All right, Anthony Rizzo's got jokes, and Rob Manfred's a bad one, and Jim Crane's a bad one. So we'll discuss a little bit of that when we come back. Spiegel and Rosenblum, Saturday Second, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage, Rosenblum and Spiegel with you. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. 140 in about 11 minutes. We will talk with Rick Camp and Herb Lawrence. They will follow us today. They'll be on from 2 to 5, and
And Bulls basketball, we'll pregame with David Schuster. We'll be here at 5:45. They'll play the Suns, a game they should win. And they probably will, because it will hurt them in the draft and the tankathon, since they're not going to the playoffs. So anyways, we got a text. 67011 is our text line. 773. Do you guys get Marquee in the studio? It's on now. No, we don't.
No.
We have Xfinity in the studio, so what we get is an Emerald air fryer advermercial.
Yeah.
So we don't get it. So
I'm interested in the air fryer, though.
Trusting that it's on the air.
What's weird is that...
Makes up golden is what it does.
What's weird, I didn't expect this, is that Ryan Dempster is also in the Emerald air fryer commercial.
He's everywhere. He can't stop himself.
Dempster is actually going to be heavily involved in this thing. I have to go to this thing, Steve.
What thing?
It's called Innings Fest.
Oh, it's out in Arizona.
It's a music festival the same weekend that I arrived there, just before the Scorehouse week. So Feb 29 and March 1 and March 2 or whatever, 28, 29, 1 is Innings Fest. And there's all sorts of bands out there. There's Dave Matthews and Portugal the Man.
I was going to ask if it's like Pitchforkness, or is it like sort of Lollapalooza or Bonnaroo
more
or
jam
Coachella?
Bandy. More Bonnaroo, I guess.
Okay.
A little more Bonnaroo, although Bonnaroo is kind of expanded and trying to figure itself out. So a little more Bonnaroo-y. But there's also a Dempster's doing a live off the mound thing with like Sutcliffe and Brett Saberhagen and a million different ball players. There's like 20 or 25 different ball players are going to be there, as well as the music. Gotta go.
You need to.
I do.
That's the nexus. We discussed it last week.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if we discussed this last week. I want to make sure we get to this.
Okay.
Rick Sutcliffe responding to Super 70 Sports. It's a wonderful Twitter follow, Super 70 Sports. And he ran this picture of Mike Schmidt and Dale Murphy. Two players hit 300-plus home runs in the 80s. You're looking at them. So Rick Sutcliffe retweeted it and said they couldn't have done it without me.
that's tremendous.
But you have to go to – I knew Innings Fest was a thing the last couple of years, but I wasn't sure the quality. I've heard some of the names. I didn't know what it was, where it stacks up, or if it's become even bigger. And it sounds like it's become even bigger. I don't even know. Was it always a weekend? Was it always 3 days? 3 days, three nights.
What's that? The
Innings Fest.
I don't know. I don't know how often it's ever happened. I don't know the history of it. I just know that I need to get my arse out there.
You need to go.
Yes, I do.
All right, so Anthony Rizzo's got jokes.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say I won't lead the league in hit by pitches this year. And then he had a gif of three trash cans. So that brings up yet another step in the another example of Rod Manfred stepping in it. Because in refusing to strip the Astros of the title once he confirmed the sign stealing scandal,
mm-hmm.
and of all the things he levied, if you're an owner, if you're an arrogant owner like Jim Crane, and by the way, according to Bob Clappish, who tweeted out that Jim Crane was warned about the coming storm, he was urged to gather his players to prepare for the industry reaction and the media questions, and he passed on the idea, said it'll blow over by spring training.
Yeah, my God.
This will never blow over.
No.
We're talking about the 1919 White Sox in our last segment. It will never blow over. And he's just an arrogant piece of crap, Jim Crane is, and he's...
Completely and utterly non-humbled by the entire experience.
Enabled misogynistic beliefs there. And so it's worth it. I only have to fire my general manager, my manager, and I get to keep a World Series. That was among the many things Rob Manfred did wrong in this whole situation. But now he's going around saying that the Houston Astros are not going to lead the league in getting hit by pitches this year. They're just not. So Rob Manfred is now protecting the cheaters. So Rob Manfred is making sure that the Astros still know which pitch is coming. It's not an inside pitch. He's making sure the Astros know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
That's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets worse every time Rob Manfred makes a decision. And I don't know that he doesn't like baseball. I don't think he cares much about anything except whatever's going to make the owners money.
He's a lawyer. It's just a lawyer and then a businessman and now a commish and a pawn of the owners. That sport,
Mongo just pawn in Game of Life.
Yeah, that sport changed for the worse. Right after Bart Giamatti died and Faye Vincent took over. And then Faye Vincent was the last guy who truly tried to act in the best interest of baseball. I don't care how many times you've heard that phrase since the owners usurped the power of Faye Vincent, knocked him out, replaced him with the used car salesman Bud Selig. Anytime you've heard in the best interest of baseball from the commissioner's office, it's never been that. It's been the best interests of the owners. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And Faye Vincent forced out, and that was a real tragedy. And look at the difference between the way that Rob Manfred gets along with the players in MLB or not. The difference between that and Adam Silver and the players in the NBA. Mm-hmm. The players are empowered. Maybe it makes you uncomfortable how much the players are empowered, or you think it's negative for the franchises or whatever. But really, when you stop and think about it, that's the product.
They're the show.
They're the show. They're the ones you go to see, as the baseball players are. And the NBA players are empowered. They respect and talk to Adam and listen to Adam. It is a two-way street. This idea for the Elam ending for the All-Star game... Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they saw it in the basketball tournament, this little other tournament that had taken place. But you know who was the person who brought it to Adam Silver's attention? Said, you know, this is interesting. Did you see this? You guys should talk about this. Chris Paul.
I didn't know that, really.
Chris Paul was the guy who said, because the Big Three used it too. The Big Three tournament.
Oh.
So Chris Paul he's the one who said to Adam Silver like a year ago, hey, this is pretty interesting. You should think about this. And Silver looked at it, talked to his people, said, yeah, you know what? Let's give it a shot. What the hell? Let's give it a shot. And we'll add this Kobe Bryant wrinkle with the 24 points. That was the best All-Star game in any sport I've seen in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And maybe ever, that fourth quarter. The level of effort. The first pass of an offensive possession was being contested. They couldn't get into their offense because they were playing defense and drawing charges and stuff like that. Came from a player. And the players were asked afterwards, hey, what'd you think? It was great. Adam listens to the players and he's always open to our ideas. That's the dream relationship. And baseball is the furthest thing from it.
And Rob Manfred is in a, he negotiated himself into a tough position. He now looks even worse. It's not just that he gave immunity to the Houston Astro players and the union said, they all get immunity. And what the union did was, you know, we protect our players, Tony Clark said. Well, what about the Mike Bolsingers of the world?
Yeah, what about those players?
They didn't get protected very well, did they? They lost careers.
What about Yu Darvish, who was convinced that he was tipping pitches in a World Series when the Astros were stealing signs, and it destroyed him?
Clayton Kershaw. Mm-hmm. There's a guy with postseason, you know, that postseason black cloud, right?
He's got postseason PTSD.
That made it work. Well, maybe that's the year that he wins the World Series.
Maybe that's the year.
That changes the narrative for him, right?
I've talked about the Darvish thing. Maybe Darvish doesn't freak out and have a very difficult mental and emotional first season with his new team quite as much if he knows that the Astros were stealing signs as opposed to him just getting destroyed.
Right. And he still might have had a difficult time because if John Lester can have a difficult first half trying to live up to that contract, yep, I would think Yu Darvish could too.
Sure.
And so yeah, it's still might, but in. Not really the to that degree, I don't think, questioning everything. So I think Rob Manfred looks even worse now every time something comes out. And what just came out is Jonathan Lucroy saying, I was in the A's. We told them a year ago this was happening. And MLB never investigated.
Yeah, it's brutal. That is absolutely brutal.
So we will we'll take a break. When we come back, we will welcome in Rick Camp and Herb Lawrence. We will do transition. And Rick Camp, of course, is one of the famous flabby founders of the I'm Fat podcast, and he's unabashedly a fat. And I have somebody that I think they need to induct into the Onion Ring Hall of Fame. We'll share that, and we'll discuss this whole sports ball thing with them. He's Spiegel. I'm Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum invites you to play in a baseball game with 1860. That's the decades. 1860s style rules. So you're like, okay, what was this game, Dan?
So it turned out to be the first annual, and I know Herb Lawrence hates that term, so we'll call it the inaugural.
It's what happens when your guest is a scorehead. Interviewing Dan Wallach of the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum, and he's talking about the 1860s game that they played down there, the Shoeless Joe Jackson Museum versus the Ty Cobb Museum, suiting up, and he calls it first annual and gives Herb Lawrence a shout-out.
First and last annual. But it wasn't the last annual.
No, it ended up being an annual. They were hoping it would be. Well, how do you call it an inaugural if you don't know for sure that it's going to happen again?
Well,
you know?
let's ask the grammarian here. Here's Herb Lawrence.
That's why you call it inaugural, so it can stand alone. So if you need to have that be the only one, it can be the itself.
I got you. Just in case something happens, you'd never have a second annual. You haven't embarrassed yourself.
Exactly. You can't have a one without a two. Because if you're your parents' only child, you're not their first child. You're your only child.
You came first.
But if you said, hey, I'm my parents' first child, like, oh, where's your brother and sister? Like, I only have it's only me.
Yeah.
They would be confused if you said, I'm my parents' first child.
Mm-hmm.
They would assume you have more. So, you know, I'm pedantic, whatever.
Right. It's like calling your first wife before there is any
exactly.
reason to think there might be a second one.
Right. I used to do that, and she still remains. She was the first wife. And so we've been asked, we've been texted here if we were watching Marquee, and we said no because we get Xfinity in the studio. So we were watching the Emerald Air Fryer commercial for an hour. And then on my tweeter machine, Phil Rosenthal tweeted out that he's still on the phone with RCN Connects regarding Watch Marquee. He's at the 40-minute mark. Being on the phone. So good news for Comcast Xfinity subscribers. You're not missing anything because the picture is the screen grab is you can't view Marquee Sports. This may be because you do not yet subscribe to this channel. Please contact RCN, and then you get to wait on hold contacting RCN.
Oh, yeah. So if for those scoring at home, Herb Lawrence and Rick Camp, and congratulations if you are, by the way. So we have not available, of course, as we know, on Xfinity, YouTube TV, all those things. But where they are available, DirecTV, how's that going on DirecTV?
According to Evan Altman, it is not available via the Marquee app.
Yeah. No, you can't get it yet on the app because they don't have the authentication lined up. If you have DirecTV, the channel itself on the DirecTV is not working yet. Didn't you tell me that, Rick? There's no nothing there just yet.
It's
it's not on Hulu Live yet either.
Not exactly what we call a smooth rollout.
No.
I mean, maybe smooth in that there hasn't been a peak at all because it hasn't gotten off the ground. But you know,
have they had enough time to do this? I'm sure. You know, what, months, maybe a year plus to know what's going on. They hired their people a month ago, the on-air staff, so
it's
would think that
it's a good thing it's that they move the game tonight.
Yeah, right. Sinclair is a TV, big-time thing. They paired up with people who know how to run TV. So you would think that things like this wouldn't be the problem. And it's not a good start for Marquee if you're going to be a Cub fan wanting to get their product. But you know what? 162 here on the Score.
There you go. Starting tonight.
No. Because not the Bulls. We should have had the Cubs in the afternoon. We would have been off at 155 here.
Here's the thing about this, Herbie, though, real quick. Obviously, they've done whatever they've done to have helped this roll out so sloppy. But how bad is your cable company usually? Like, how miserable is your standard cable company customer service experience?
Always terrible.
And always terrible. So that's that's the gatekeeper beyond the facilitators as well. So who knows where the ugliness is coming
from. And with
from.
The radio feed on March 1st, I believe Matt Spiegel doing play-by-play.
How about it, man?
I'm glad you brought that up. Crazy. We had not discussed that today. We discussed Innings Fest, which is a standard nexus of sports and music, but congratulations.
Thank you.
What contest did you win?
Score search.
That's right. No, that's the other. That's the midday guy. Okay.
All midday guys.
All midday. That's right. That's how they all work. No, man. I've been like, what did I do? I think I did 11 pre and post last year. I went 9-2
Killed it,
as a pre and post guy. And every time I'd say, "Hey, Zach, can I do the fifth inning?" "Hey, Mitch, can I do the fifth inning?" And Mitch would say, "No." And I said, "Well, how about next year as spring training comes around? Maybe I get a shot at doing a game. Get some flat miles." I mean, he said, "I'll consider that." And then here we are. He considered it and gave me a shot. So I don't know that it'll mean I get to do the fifth inning during the game, probably, or during the season. Probably not. But
you will be doing the spring training game a week from tomorrow. March 1st.
That's crazy.
And you will be an actual, real live Ron Coomer sitting next to you.
The best. The nicest guy.
Yes.
The best teammate. Like, it just, whatever you need, Speaks. What can I help you with? What can I do? As soon as I walked in there for the first time.
Will you get Zackles in the background? Will he laugh unceremoniously at your...
I think I have DePaul basketball to thank for this opportunity.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You would.
So
not
that's
many
what
Zackles in DePaul basketball right now.
No.
Got grim.
Not a lot.
I mean, if DePaul hits a streak in the Big East and somehow wins the Big East, they're bad. Whatever.
Yeah.
You might have some more games because Zach might have to go to Madison Square Garden for an extended period of time.
Hey, a boy can dream.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Either that, and Zach knows this. I either wish is Big East success or crippling diarrhea on Zach. I wish one of those two.
Wow. Are they going to be...
diarrhea is much more possible.
Right. Are they going to be performing at Innings Fest? Is that one of the bands?
Crippling diarrhea. Hey, we are crippling diarrhea.
All right, so we have some texts that people are getting it in Decorah, Iowa. Mediacom is carrying Marquee.
There you go.
815, I'm currently watching the Marquee Network. It has too much Ryan Dempster.
this texture says channel 664 on DirecTV. He's watching it right now. So there it is. Oh. That's the big one that they have is DirecTV, AT&T, and available. Okay. So there you go.
Okay, Rick Camp, before we get out of here, I did want to bring this to your attention as a certified fat.
True.
And as one of the founding members of the I'm Fat podcast that is grossly underrated, I believe. There should be awards you should be for which you should be nominated. Here is somebody that I think you should consider for your Onion Ring Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Baltimore Ravens offensive lineman Bradley Bozeman. He went down to Amarillo, Texas, and he ate a meal that consisted of this, a 72-ounce steak.
You finish it and it's free.
That's a shrimp cocktail.
Oh, boy.
A salad that takes up too much space.
Right.
A roll with butter, and do it under 1 hour. He did it with 10 minutes to spare.
Oh, my God.
He did it in 50 minutes.
That's good.
4.5 pounds of romp-and-stompin' steak on its own.
And a salad.
And there's
you got to have color on the plate somewhere.
And that's it.
That's what I'm told.
So that's an epic thing.
That really is. Yeah, the time aspect. Because, like, I've thought of, and it's been threatened on the air sometimes for, like, I would do something along those lines with pizza rolls. And I'm very confident I could eat a boatload of pizza rolls in the course of a Bernstein and McKnight show. But doing it in that short amount of time, that much food is where it's really impressive.
How much is a boatload? Is that a technical term?
Like if you go to Costco and get the biggest pizza roll
It's like the biggest one I normally see is like a 90 pack. I'm confident I could get through a 90 pack in the course of a show.
Wow. I want to see it now.
Well, just in a Bernstein explanation of something, you could get through that. You'd have to eat to forget.
God, now you're making me not want to do it because it'd then get a Bernstein explanation.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Thank David Schuster, Eldon Ham, Dan Wallach, and Zach Withers, Sean Anderson. Thank everyone who listened, texted, whatever. Thank you that you can't get Marquee, so you're listening to The Score. Rick Camp and Herb Lawrence are next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Rick Camp's in studio.
and Rick Camp in studio.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.